Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Michigan Avenue Media. A good story is a good story. Hosted by Marsha Casper Cook. Live shows every week with interesting interviews in the entertainment field with writers, producers, directors, and screenwriters. There's also shows about newsworthy topics and group discussions about writing tips to help writers reach success. New to the show are conversations about personal struggles and how to feel good about yourself in today's world. One thing's for sure, it's always a lively conversation and lots of fun. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Hi, everybody. It's Marsha. We've got a great show today. We're going to start it off right off now. I don't have that many announcements because next week is Thanksgiving. So I'm going to Marta Moran Bishop, who has been on several times, Stephen Walker and Robert Walker. And they all were involved in Marta's project. So I thought this would be a great idea to see what inspired the book that she did, Mice, and her graphics that came in from Stephen and the editing from Robert. So I thought that's where we'll go. But at first, I would like all of them to introduce themselves so that you know who they are. Marta?
Hi, my name is Marta Moran Bishop, and if it wasn't for Robert Walker, I would not still be writing. He is a magnificent person, and his son Stephen is glorious, and I'm so happy to have them both as friends. I write in multiple genres and have been for 14 or 15 years.
Okay.
That's you.
Well, there's a lot more to you than that. Okay.
There's a lot more to me, yeah.
Robert's been on before also. And Robert, you want to tell everybody, you know, a little bit about yourself, because you're everybody on here is an expert in what they do today.
Yeah, I began writing in high school. My first novel was in emulation of Mark Twain, his boys' book, Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn. And I got it in my head that I could do the sequel. So I wrote my first book as kind of a sequel to Huckleberry Finn, which was a crazy idea.
Well,
anyway,
the
book did get published in 1982, and now it's on Amazon. It's called Daniel Webster Jackson and the Wrong Way Railway. Since then, having turned into a 75-year-old, tomorrow's my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Right. I remember Marta saying that. Happy birthday.
Yeah. Well, since turning 75 in that high school first book, I got hooked on writing and have written, working on now my 90th and my 91st novella.
Wow.
So I've been a bit busy also teaching. I love teaching, but I'm retired from teaching now, so I'm continuing on to my new goal. I keep setting new goals. My new goal is to make out 100 books, and my books aren't short or anything. They average about 70,000 words. So I feel like I've done pretty well for myself, and all my books are now on Amazon. Yeah, they just go to
all your books just on Amazon. Are they on Amazon or are they on other places too?
And,
just Amazon.
Audible. Some of them are, I still have some that are still in paperback.
The paperback ones all the paperbacks will also be on Barnes & Noble.
Amazon.
And Barnes & Noble paperbacks.
Yeah. And the couple of small publishers still holding paperbacks.
Well, a lot of people are going back to paperbacks because they're on the computer so much and the phone. I think they just need a break. So I think it might turn into, you know, a different kind of world. Well, that's another story, but it could turn into where where people are reading books and holding them again.
Well, thanks to Steve, I'm getting more and more of them in paperback.
Yeah,
he knows how to do things like that.
Yeah, we put several up on paperback on the Amazon. However, it's a process, and it's a daunting process because of the sheer number of books. Like, I don't even know where to start.
Right. All right, do you want to talk? Let's talk about you a little, Stephen. Tell everybody what you do, and then we'll all ask questions about what's going on with all of this, because it's a good way to go with everybody on a team here.
Certainly. Well, my name's Stephen Robert Walker. I'm the son of Robert Walker. I've been a graphic designer for over 20 years now. I graduated Florida State University with a degree in writing, actually, but I never really got anywhere with that. And then discovered a school called Portfolio Center in Atlanta and went through that process. And started freelancing after that and never looked back. I did a lot of volunteer work for organizations in the area and got my name out there and got business from that. I've been doing book covers for my dad for ages. And so over time, I've been doing book covers for all sorts of different authors because dad knows a lot of authors.
Yeah. Okay, you know, right, and I will say before I forget this, on the show page, everybody's website is there, so you can go. They all have really good websites, that I can say.
Designed by Stephen Walker.
Yes, and right, and so they're beautiful websites. So you can take a look, even if you're, you know, just not looking for the book, but just to see how the graphics, they're really, really good, you know. And some people don't think it's necessary these days, but I still believe a website is really important. You need to have like a landing page. You can't always be on Facebook. You can't always be on Twitter, but everybody can find you on your website. So I think it's important. All right, Marta? Okay, let's start with you. You decided to do this book. Let's talk about myself, because everybody was involved in that. So tell me how you started and what happened.
There's four episodes. And they're short little episodes. And how it started is that for a solid year, the mice that live under the tack room in my horse barn were chewing through the dirt floor under the mats to get the little bits of grain. And they were chewing from 3 inches to 4 inches deep all around one side of the stall. And for lack of anything else handy, I was filling it in with manure. And then I read that there was supposed to you could use peppermint balls in order to keep the mice away when they kept going after, and every day I was filling them in, and the peppermint balls would disappear. And so I'm standing with my husband and laughing about it, and I messaged Stephen, and I said, what are they doing with it all? And he started sending me in DM these graphics, and it inspired me to write these little humorous stories about this mice community that them finding the place under the tack barn and making the community and inventors inventing things and a lot of camaraderie. But literally Stephen and Robert edited, and he taught me how important it was to use conversation to carry a story forward. And he helped add some conversation in and some things in the editing. And the books took off as a result of me telling Stephen and then Robert helping. Without the three of us.
Yeah, I think the editing process is important in every project. I wouldn't do a project
without
an editor.
Yeah, you can't go without
all my
an
books
editor.
Have been,
really can't.
And all my own books, I use editing, Alpha Readers, anybody who would take a look at it, bother to take a look at it. And,
no,
You can often find Apple readers that are happy to do it without charging at all. But of course, there are great editors. Like I think of myself as an editor as well as a writer, because I teach. I taught writing for 40 years.
I think you know what you're doing. Well, that's the thing. Yeah. That's unfortunately the market the way it is. It's independent market is a great market. However, independent publishing, you need to have editing. You need to have a good cover. You need to have a good story. You just can't take a book and throw it out there and just put it on Amazon. So this is why we're talking about this today, because all of these steps are important to making a good book. You know, it's nice, all the people that are doing this now, I've done this for 20 years and I was an agent, so I know that people gave up. So it's not good. You just kind of, if you have a good story, you have to work on it, but you also have to follow the rules. And one of the basic rules is editing. If you don't, you just
and
eventually,
a great book cover.
You can't write. Yes.
And
a great book cover. Okay.
Yeah,
Stephen, let's talk about
I
the great.
A lot of pathetic.
Oh, yeah.
I see a lot of pathetic covers on the indie publishing. I see a lot of bad covers.
There are, but you know what? Even in the big publishing houses, I've seen covers that I do not understand how it even passes anything. I mean, it's a test of, and they're just not good. And they're from publishers, you know. So I think that that's the other thing. When you independently publish, you get to pick a cover. Sometimes the publishers, they do it for you, and you can't keep changing covers if you don't like it. So, Stephen, we'll talk a little bit about that for, so you know, how you do the graphics, what comes in your mind. Like, certainly when you saw Marta's, you know, it's great, all the graphics. I mean, it's just
they're
great.
They're adorable covers. It's just great.
Oh,
great
they are. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, part of the process is to get to know the story and you know, one thing that I've always kind of stuck with as a hallmark of graphic design for anything having to do with fiction or stories is to not reveal too much, to not be super specific, especially when it comes to your characters. If you show a character on the cover of the book, you automatically put in the reader's head what that character looks like, and nothing is left to the imagination. So I love to use shadows and the hint of the character, but not. But in recent times, I used to do a lot of graphic design by pulling together various found art and photography and other graphics and blending them together in Photoshop to create covers. The real game changer, especially for you you authors who don't have a lot of money to spend on a real game changer is artificial intelligence. The image generation I'm using primarily Midjourney is an image generation AI. And some people find the AI controversial. We'll get into that later. But it is a game changer for this kind of thing because I am not an illustrator. Illustrators are extremely expensive. So the AI gives me the opportunity to visualize something. And then, again, I take it into Photoshop. And I sometimes I'm blending multiple images together to create the cover. And
but that takes a skill.
With Marta's
skill.
Well, yes, I
there's
mean,
a skill.
In Photoshop
you can't. I mean, you can't just right. So I mean, because it's not just you put it on. I mean, you have to be skilled to do that because to come out the way yours do, you can't just throw it out. So that's one of the things too. You have to have the skill to do it.
Yeah. Well. The skill and also the patience. I mean, anybody could watch a couple of YouTube instructional videos on how to use Photoshop. But it's going to take you 2 weeks where it takes me, that's I've been doing it for 20 years. So I can move very fast.
So for I just want to ask for people that are, Can you just say what price range, not only yours, but what is the price range for people that they could expect to spend, starting at the lowest to the highest, so they just have some idea? Because a lot of people have no idea how much a cover costs. So if someone quotes them $2,000, they think, oh, okay, fine, I'll do this. So what would be just a range that people should look to for that?
Well, by and large, my median price for a book cover is $300.
Okay.
You know, there's kind of a sliding scale because some people just don't have money to spend on a cover. And then, you know, I read the book or I know them somehow. And I'm like, okay, you know, we'll fudge the price here. But, you know, a lot of other designers would charge you anywhere from $500 to $2,000, like you said.
Right.
And beyond.
Right.
But with the advent of the AI, it makes my job a whole lot easier getting the graphics, because otherwise I'm looking through stock photos and things like that, trying to piece together what I need, and I'm spending money out of pocket to buy the graphics needed for the cover. So again, that makes my price point lower.
So that's a good thing, so people can know that.
Yeah. If you want to see magnificent covers, if you want to see really magnificent covers, go to my website, which is Robert Walker.
I have it on here. Books.com.
All three of our websites have my book cover designs on them. My own personal website is my graphic design website, and Dad's, of course, is Dad's. And Marta's website I also developed and did a lot of the covers for.
He redid most of my covers, too.
Yeah.
He's redone all of my covers from publishing from New York publishers, about 40 books. He's redone all of them, and they're all better than what the New York publishers did for me.
Well, that's the thing. See, that's the – right. Because I do look at a lot of covers all the time, and I am shocked at how, you know, they're really not good, you know. And so that's why I want people to know it doesn't always cost $2,000. You can work something out and get somebody with talent, because sometimes editors in the publishing houses don't exactly see what you see. You know, some editors are not that creative. You know, that's one of the things in the market of children's books. When you send to children's publishing companies without any illustration, sometimes those editors looking at the words on the page cannot envision, you know, they just don't envision what you're thinking, and they pass on the book, which if the book had great illustrations, the whole thing would work out. The whole book would be beautiful, but they don't do that. And so that's a problem for children's authors. You know,
they often don't know what the story is. They don't read the book, and they write copy editing, which is the stuff on the back of the book. And then the artist goes from back, the errors in the back of the book, the artist or marketing director takes it from there, and it just gets multiple errors.
Yeah.
I've had a couple
of
covers. I've had a couple that I can't hardly stand them myself. One looks like a textbook. Instead of a novel.
Well, see, right. You have to be creative. I mean, you need to be creative for this. That's why, you know, even if you just look at a picture, doesn't mean you're going to be able. It's going to be good on a book cover. So creativity comes into that. You know, so all of this matters in a book.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially when
you're on a time.
Yeah,
go ahead. A lot of times the publishing houses are more concerned about money than they are about creativity respect for the author's story. And, you know, like Dad said, half the time it's like, did you actually read the book?
No, that's true. No, that is
But you
true.
Also get
and
into
pay...
big presses and small presses.
Yeah.
You have to pay for your cover yourself.
That's correct. I've been doing some covers for small publishers, one dad's been working with, and basically I've been doing the covers for free. It's like, okay.
See, that's
because
the whole thing.
Because you have to pay for the covers. You have to pay for the illustrations, even with a small publisher.
That's the thing. When people don't, years ago people would go like, oh, I don't want to pay for anything. And that worked years ago. Because you could say, like, oh, I don't want to pay for a review, I don't want to pay for this, I don't want to pay for that, but this is not happening now. You have to pay. If you want your book to look good and you want to sell, which I'll get to this in a minute, because Marita does a lot of marketing. So that's another thing. You can do everything wonderful, and then your book just sits there. So, Marita, talk a little bit about what needs to be done. And it's really hard to get an audience it is now. It's not like it was, because now Facebook, it does not get anywhere sometimes. And people are going like, nobody's sharing, nobody's looking. That's what happens. So you have to find alternatives to that. What are you telling people, Marita, these days, what to do?
I'm telling them to look for other sites. I'm going to be starting a YouTube. I'm working on starting a YouTube channel. Hey, Stephen, I'm going to need a graphic for it.
No doubt.
For children's books, where I'm literally going to sit in a stuffed chair and do it the old-fashioned way and read the book like I'm on TV, or pieces of the book for once a week. But do TikTok, do Instagram.
Well, that's fun, Marta, but also don't forget about your newsletter.
I have my newsletter, which I, which by
the
way, Marcia, I have your book in coming up. Yes, I have your book, one of your books coming in the next couple of weeks. I throw people, you never ever know when I'm going to throw your stuff in it.
I keep saying I'm going to do a newsletter.
I hunt over Facebook and Twitter, and what different people I know are doing, and I will put them in my newsletter.
Going back to
I'm going to add a little something to this also. People need reviews. So Kathy Goldwyn, who will be on the show in a couple more weeks, which she's been on before, she has a service, and I think it's a wonderful service. It's $50, and then she has a lot of readers, and you can get reviews that way. And they're fair reviews. They all read the book. It's a really great service. So, that's what I would suggest to people, because you can't keep putting out, I want a review, because these people out there are not reviewing your book. And if, that's the thing. I'm always looking for newer audiences, because your friends are your friends, but they're not buying your book. They're just, I don't know what they're not buying the books. And so no matter how hard you try to get reviews, you have to figure out other ways to get them, because people just aren't reviewing like they did before. That's how it is. And you are in competition with people, which I still have no idea how they end up getting 2,000 reviews, because in Amazon, I've said this, I think I say this every show, if we didn't have all the ratings on Amazon, most people would probably sell more books, because the competition is so high, and everybody looks at the people that have the number 1 to like maybe 100, and that's only all those people. But what about everybody else? And the next thing I want to just say before I get into the conversation is also, if it's a book, is an older book, you can read a book that's 10 years old and still enjoy it. I do not, I look at all of the things. I'm always on Facebook. I'm on a lot of sites. And they're only pushing new books. This is so insane. I can't, Robert, you just mentioned, Mark Twain. Okay, people still read those books. So I think that's classic. One of the things that's not helping anybody. So I just always like to add that when people are, because people feel depressed that their book isn't getting where it should be. But if you enjoy writing and you love the book you did, then just be happy with that and just do the best you can and keep writing. So that's it. But I just wanted to say that, because it's important that people know that you don't need to have 2,000 reviews to have a good book.
I'm not sure where all those reviews are coming from. I don't trust them myself.
I know. I have no idea. I don't know how that happens.
I might have 40 reviews, but yeah. they're actual reviews.
Right.
And
right.
They're real. Going
yeah,
back to
they're
what,
real.
Going back to how good Steve's work is. Mm-hmm. I've had 13 books that were published by small press using his mm-hmm. covers, and most small press as well as New York publishers will not use outside art from anyone.
Right.
That's just
they're
one of
in-house.
The things that they do.
Right, it's in-house.
They
yeah.
have their own art department. And Steve has had 13 of my books cover, you know, from outside, which is really some kind of record.
So, because I
the
think
covers
the covers
that he's done for me are so fabulous.
Yeah, they are. They are. You know, I've changed my
Stephen how he
yeah,
ended up coming up with the mice covers.
Yeah.
Well, it's a process. I mean, you know, it just I read as much of the book as I can, first of all, and get a feel for the characters and the story. And one thing about me is that I'm extremely intuitive. I used to work at a New Age bookstore, of all things. you know, the store had psychic readers. The store, and I explored a lot of spirituality, and I have an innate intuition when it comes, especially when it comes to creative clients. A lot of my clients are really not exciting stuff, you know. I mean, the more interesting ones are the nonprofits that, you know, do good things in the community. But then I have a lot of private investigators, of all things. And boy, you know, it's just not very exciting work. So doing book covers like kind of sparks my creativity, and I've never had the patience to sit down and write a dang novel. I used to write a lot of poetry back when I was getting my writing degree, but I just never could get it together. I don't know how y'all do it, but I
so,
really
yeah.
enjoy
well, you see,
bringing
that yeah.
into. Right?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I just really get a kick out of bringing the story to life. It's like when somebody's starting up a company and I do a logo for them, and they're just getting off the ground, or they haven't even gotten the company off the ground. They get that logo, they get that business card, and it's like they just feel so inspired to be great, and that's what I live for.
Yeah, well, that's very good, because that's a good thing to hear, because you don't hear that all the time, because everything is so mechanical in this world. This one does this. That's why I thought today would be an interesting show, because all of you are there, and you've worked on the editing and, you know, marketing and the cover and, you know, ideas. So I think that people that think they can just say, oh, 1, 2, 3, you can't. You cannot write a book 1, 2, 3. This is a process. And
but you know,
the cover is important. Go ahead, Marty.
The funny thing about the mice books is that when you start to get intuitive and empathetic and name your mice, they become characters.
Great.
It's very hard to think badly of them. Even when you're still, 2 years later, filling in holes.
Well, let's
yeah.
just put it this
well,
way.
Well, it's funny because the mice.
Go ahead.
The Mice of Barnville short stories came. The covers came first, essentially.
Yes, they did.
They did?
Inspired
oh,
the book.
Interesting.
They,
really?
They inspired
oh,
the book.
Oh, good.
Each one of the graphics he sent me inspired the episodes.
I've had stories inspired by a single title. You know, sometimes a title will inspire me to write the book.
Yeah.
Like Ghost Gun. When the first time I heard that term, I knew I wanted to write a Western. And I did. I wrote three of that title, series of three.
Yeah.
But
Title matters. A title matters too. I have lists of titles. If I think of something and I just put a title down, and that can make you think of the whole story. If you don't write it down.
That's the other thing Stephen did, is that he took what was going to be a short winter story that turned into a novel, Frizz on the Wind. He named it.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
I forgot I had done that.
Title.
Yeah, we brainstormed on titles, and
He named it. He created the most magnificent cover based upon the characters that I was writing about. But the cover came about midway through the book. Maybe a quarter of the way through the book, but I had no name for it. And I don't know if the book would have taken the same direction or not, except my characters do take me on a merry chase, and I just kind of
Right, that's what characters do, you know, whether they're dogs, mice, you know, because I have my character Gracie, so she's my, you know, I'm going to bring her back. But, I mean, it just be a character is a character no matter what. If it's a horse, like, as you know, it's just how it is, you know. So I think people, that's what writing is. It's imagination, you know, and that's what, obviously, creating a cover and a title, that goes along with it. So you have to have some kind of an imagination to do this.
And
or,
so does a good editor who is able to understand the story well enough to bring your add conversation or a scenario into what the characters would be doing because they understand the story.
Yes.
But also to steer you in the right direction when you're heading off the rails, and because sometimes when you're working on something like that, you can get too close to it. So having an editor work with you. Dad, I think you wanted to discuss a little bit about the first person versus third person versus.
Oh yeah, let's do that. Yeah. That's good. That's a good topic. Go ahead. That's good.
When first of all, every fiction writer should read Jerome Stern's "Making Shapely Fiction," fantastic book. And I wrote up my class, the class I've taught for 40 years. I put in book form. And that's called dead-on fiction. Dead-on writing. And the skills, like, for instance, when you start a book, you have to decide who's going to tell the story. First person, second person, which is kind of rare, or third person. Third person, multiple point of view. First person, you only have one point of view. It restricts you. There are some great first-person novels written, or singular character, you know, like My Daniel Webster Jackson and The Wrong Way Railway. Everything's shifted through his mind and his feelings. That's singular. But if you write a multiple, you've got two cops riding in a squad car. Both of them, you get into the minds of both of them, and there's a multiplicity. So Jerome Stern's book is the best thing I've ever read about discussion about these items. And this creates a voice of your characters, the voice that the narrator, the narrative voice. Voice is the secret to all good writing. Yeah.
Now the question I have for you, Rob, when you're finished.
Yeah.
When you have multiple. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Voice alone is the first place you start with your first scene, your first chapter, your first sentence. Who's telling the story? Is it one singular voice,
or is it going to be multiple?
Yeah. Narrative.
So.
If your narrator is a child, it's one thing. If your narrator is an adult, a police officer, he's going to know a lot about police. If he's a professor at a college, he's going to have a different voice. Who's telling
right.
the story? What does he sound like? Okay.
Now, can you take and do first person, multiple characters doing first person with multiple characters?
I
mean, can you have
I don't know. Maybe if you did a different chapter. Maybe if you did a different chapter.
If you, for instance, the mice books.
I don't know.
Your mice books are in multiple points of view, because you have all the characters discussing things with each other. You have dialogue. You don't have one character saying, "Well, I saw this, and this is what I think." And
right. Yeah.
There's a restriction to first person. I don't like writing in first person myself. I want the unrestricted, multiple point of view. Remember, your characters, the mice go from the elders, and they have a scene together, and then it goes to the younger mice, and they have a scene together. That's multiple point of view. And you did it instinctively, because I didn't tell you to do that.
Well, you sort of kind of did. When you when I first was starting to write Dinky the Nursemaid's Foal, which is about my real horse, who I adopted at 4 months old and watched him grow up and knew his story.
I recall.
You told me to read Jack London and all of these, everything I could find that was told first person animal.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, somebody told me, an editor told me, you cannot have it done by the horse from the horse's point of view. Well, it's the whole book is written from the various horses' points of view.
And I told you, if it's about the woodchuck, it's from the woodchuck's point of view.
Right, you did.
Yeah.
Right, because that's like when my Gracie, when she talks, it's her point of view. You know, she's the comedy in the romantic comedy, but she's talking. So that's whatever she's saying. You know, I think that's the other thing. I just want to bring this up. We were talking about this a few weeks ago. Sometimes, you know, authors like myself, you know, I didn't get a degree in writing, but think we just kind of write. Right, exactly. Well, right. That is what happened after lab school. I was a lab tech for years, so I worked for doctors and hospitals. So I went to a college that, you know, they offered, you know, adults returning to college. So I explained to them what I wanted to do. Like, so they said, listen, go home and write. And that's what I did, you know, because anything I would have taken wouldn't have done what I needed to do. But you have to, when you're writing, sometimes we don't have to think about if we've got a pronoun, an adverb, because I think that's what makes people get writer's block. You just have to write, and that's what you need a good editor for, because if you start second-guessing everything you do, you'll never finish a book. And that's what that's why I think, you know, right, going in, like what you're saying is good. I think that dead-on writing, I didn't get that, but somebody, you mentioned that on my show, I think, and somebody else was going to get that book. So I think I'm going to look up that book, too.
It's a wonderful book. Wonderful book.
Yeah.
There are skills that you can learn that you can, it becomes part of your writing.
Right.
I got a lot of prompts, a lot of lessons and prompts that I use in my class. And I've had students learn to emulate the voice of their favorite author. And then I would try to guess who that was, that author.
Yeah.
And, of course, if it was somebody, if I had never read the author, if it was Jack London, I would tell them, oh, that's Jack London. Oh, that's Mark Twain. But if it was somebody that I would never have read, I would lose. But the idea was you can learn to, it's a compliment to learn to write like your favorite author.
which is another lesson Robert told me when we first met back in 2009, and I was working on Dinky's book, is he told me, pick up a book and finish a story from that book.
First you change it.
Interestingly enough, it was also when I went to Honors English, it was one of the lessons that my professor had us do, is take a short story and finish it in the voice of the characters.
Or extend it, or do a second story. Extend the story you read. Extend it for another scene.
Correct.
See, that's a good thing when you're saying scene. Okay, so what I was going to say is, like, when you want to write, like, dialogue, like we were talking about how to write dialogue, because if you put people in a room together and then they just talk, you know, that's how I learned dialogue, from writing, like, screenplays, because if you put two people across from each other on a table, you know, even if it's two dogs talking to each other, they're just talking. You say, like, oh, like, what are you wearing? Or something like this. Why are you wearing this? Or, you know, change your clothes. It looks horrible or something, you know. But, I mean, that's when you get to learn how to write dialogue, because you have to, and the people in the room just don't sit there. They talk, usually, you know.
I call it the Cracker Barrel scene, where you've got all characters, the guy that knows everything, the jerk, the nice lady, and they move around the room. You know? They open the window.
Right, exactly.
They go to the door. Right. They go to the counter. They purchase something. Get back to the Cracker Barrel.
Now, interestingly enough, because of my professor and Rob telling me the same thing, I finished a number of my mother's short stories, and I finished a short story my sister started, which she had talked to me about it back in 2012. And she had me look at the very beginning parts, and I told her, you can't start every sentence with I, me, me, me. And then I never saw the story again, but I did know how she wanted the actual ending, not how to get there, but it's a ghost story. And she started it, and I have yet to find anyone, including the narrator, who could tell where she left off and I finished.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Stephen can do a graphic to get you there.
No, I got there. The book's out.
Right, but I mean, on anything you were thinking of, because that's what somebody like Stephen, as you're saying, that he gave you help on other books. So if people need to get there, Go ahead.
Oh, for people, yeah. This particular one, which is called George Haynes, and it's an unusual ghost story, and it takes place in the 1850s during the Comstock Gold Rush.
Comstock, yeah, I remember you telling me about that.
And
your relative, she had gotten iititis. I call it iititis, the disease of first person.
She got over that, because when I inherited it, that was all gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
she rewrote it in third person.
No, she rewrote it in first person. She rewrote it in first person.
Oh, okay.
Without that.
Well, some stories need to be first person.
Then she extended it to start writing what you call the multiple POV.
Yeah.
Multiple points of view. And in that mix is where I got the story and finished it to where she was going to end up with it after she passed away.
Yeah.
But I kept in her voice well enough that no one, including the narrator, who is an English professor, could tell where I started.
Well, maybe your thoughts are like, you know, I mean, sisters.
Well, it's partially that, and it's partially going back to Stevens working in the New Age bookstore. I used to be a psychic.
Used to
be
years.
Cool. And so I still have
to be a psychic.
I still can do it. I was.
Really? Unknown self,
and
I don't know about you. Didn't know about you.
I actually was in the psychic story. I was in the whole psychic world with a lot of very, very famous psychics doing...
Well, I have an idea. Okay, if you know people or Stephen, I want to have a show like that. So if you know some psychics, come on the show. We used to... years ago, I've had a few people on. I love that topic. I believe in it. I think it's a wonderful thing to talk about. So, Marta, that will be a new job here. You can find people and be on this show because I do like to talk about that. You know, I'm very superstitious, so that's another thing. But I just wanted to add something. When you sing about first person, you know, you could do, when people are writing a story, and sometimes if you add a letter in or, you know, somebody writes a letter, that can be in first person, and you can learn about the character then. So that gets the reader maybe to feel a little more personal with you once you write a letter about that character or the character writing a letter to somebody.
I've done novels where the first person part of the novel is from the serial killer, and the rest of it is third person because that's from the detectives.
Right.
Trying to catch them.
Well, because that's how it was, right, yeah. I want to ask Stephen a question. All right, now, if a person has, I'll use the person. It's me I'm going to talk about for a second. All right, I have a book. I have a screenplay. Right. It's great because it matters, though. Okay, so Grand Central Station was the script. And it was, you know, it didn't get made, but people really liked it. So I made it into a book. And it's not anything really. It's so much different. It's so very different. Anyway, so I used the title as my title on my book. And people like the book, but I think I made a mistake.
Book.
But I don't think my title is good because for a screenplay it was good, but not for a book. So, and then every single cover I've had, and I've tried like a lot of them, and that's what I might want to do. Maybe I should, because I'm not happy, title or the cover.
Oh, Stephen
Never.
Would be able to make you a fabulous
I may be a client soon because it still bothers me. I think the book would do much better with another title. And I've had different titles, you know, when I did it for screenplays, because when you write a screenplay, you just keep changing the title a lot of times so it goes out there in a different title because you don't really know what works. But for me, it never worked. So if people are out there listening and you think you have that problem, then maybe you should, because I know a lot of people that are redoing books from years ago because things have changed over the years. And if you're not getting play out of your book and you think the story still can make it, maybe hiring someone like Stephen would help, because that has been an issue for me all the way along. Every cover, no matter what
I get. That is such a great story. And, Marcia, I have to agree with you, the cover.
Okay. Right. No. Okay. It doesn't. Okay.
And
it
it's a great story.
I really love that story. That's like one of my favorites, and I really think
it's one of mine too.
Name.
I've read it three times.
So I'm honest enough to say. So when you're looking at your own work, try to be honest. Like, I made the mistake also within that book for an audiobook. I had I'm going to change it because I had an English accent and it's all messed up at Audible. But be honest with yourself, I think, to say, you know what, I made a mistake, I need to change it. And a lot of people don't think they should do that, but I think you could. Stephen, don't you think out there's a lot of people that need to really think about their covers, and because that's all they get to show out there on Amazon?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, I see so many of the covers that end up out there, and, you know, it's your first impression. And I think, you know,
by the way, George Saint is a new cover, too.
So often it's like somebody gets a relative who has some graphic design or illustrative talent, but not enough. Then you're dealing with hurt feelings and stuff like that. So that's where things can get a little hairy. But, you know, a good book cover goes a long way. It really does.
Yeah, yeah. And
I'm not saying George Haynes isn't a good book cover, but the name won't change. But it needs something more three-dimensional.
I know what you're saying. Steve, talk to them about lettering, just lettering. Not
and the lettering
helps.
Yes, that's
right,
a good
right,
idea.
Right. A lot of times, when somebody you can immediately tell when a book cover has not been professionally designed from the typography. Typographic choices on book covers is critical. You know, everything just from the size of the title to the size of the author name, but the choice of typeface, the variation in the typeface. Like if you look at Morna's book cover for The Mice of Barnville, you can see where I've tweaked the size of the first letter and the last letter in the title. And it really makes it more dramatic. And that's just one example.
And it makes it
but
more
it depends on what you're trying.
Yeah.
Three-dimensional, too. You know, it kind of draws you into the scene on the cover. I lost my train of thought.
All right, I'll finish it. But all right, so, you know.
He actually has.
Right, you know. Go ahead.
He actually.
And not to use. He taught me not to use the same fonts in the cover.
He actually has my handwriting, my signature on 10 books, my Bloodscream series. I don't know
how
he does it.
Yeah,
well,
as the author name. So Marta mentioned like using different typefaces for the title and the author name provides another layer of separation between that bit of information and the other bit of information. So that's a good idea. But also, I see a lot of books, I see a lot of covers with the title is like multiple words and all the words are the same size. And it's like, yeah, that just is no drama.
Yeah.
So if you vary the size
of
it, like
yeah. That matters.
Well,
I think
that's part of a cover is whether or not it draws you in with the cover because there's drama in the cover.
Yeah, and just, imagine the mice of Barnville. Now, how important is the word the? So make that smaller and make mice bigger of smaller, Barnville bigger. And it provides this hierarchy that makes it much, much more dramatic without a whole lot of effort. I mean, it's not that hard to do.
Well, right, it matters, you know, and like for me, like even in my books, like when I've done them, Robin, who does them from Fidelic, she's a graphic artist, so I've always said, oh, why isn't it the same font, but it's not, so I guess I'm looking at my book now, so now I understand what you're saying. I was saying, oh, why don't you put it in the script? She goes, no, you can't do that. So she just changes, you know, because when she looks at it, she sees it maybe the way you do. It should be different.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought it should be the same. That's why I'm not a graphic artist. You know, but that's why, you know, well, I think people have to realize that a writer can be a lot of things, but we also need help. That's why I'm glad you all came on the show today, because what we're talking about is what it takes to do this. That you just don't sit down one day and the book comes out and everything is fabulous. It doesn't work that way. It takes time and energy and a lot of people working together to make it right. And so this is independent publishing can be great. It just means you're not with a big publisher. That doesn't mean you can forget about the cover, forget about the editing, forget about if the story works. You need to still do those steps. So I'm hoping people, so at the end of the day, okay, Stephen, what would you say to people out listening out there about their cover, what they need to do?
Well, you need to communicate clearly what your expectations are and what your vision is, but you also need to be flexible because some people get so specific that there's no way on earth, on God's green earth, unless you hire an illustrator, that that's going to happen. And it being so incredibly literal, so I had one author one time who wanted like some of the ideas people have are just so complicated. They have so many elements that they want shoved into the cover, and it's just not necessary. Yeah. It creates a mess. There's nothing to focus on. There's in graphic design, there's such a thing as hierarchy of focus. So you want to create the drama. You have it. Think about it in three dimensions. You have the main subject, and you have the setting, and you have maybe one or two other elements that hint at what the nature of the story is, and you think about it in three dimensions. Instead of two.
Yeah, and
okay.
I think that's a really good idea. And
so,
Marta,
can I ask a question?
Yeah, we're good. We're almost done with the show, but yes, definitely.
So if you, Stephen, if you were going to take, all right, my sister got started with the story George Haint, and Haint being an old-fashioned Southern word for aunt. And you have George, who is the point of view, and everything is really told through him and his talking to himself and his memories up until the very end. And then the story was inspired by a picture my sister sent me of an old shack in the hills, in the Silver Hill section of Virginia City, Nevada. So you have the old shack, and George wakes up in the old shack again, and it's falling apart, and you have George, and you don't find out what George actually is until the end. And you have a murder mystery. And you have a murder mystery. And you have a ghost. What would you do with something like that? I'd tell you more, but I don't want to give everybody away the story.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to say. I'd first go and experiment with,
sit there and say that George is the main ghost. Who's also a murderer.
Well, I would experiment with imagery that would provide the atmosphere that would make it clear that this is a ghost story. However, not getting too specific, I would need to know like possibly one other element there, because we would sit down and have a discussion about the full point of it, so that I get the idea of what this story is trying to get across overall, and go from there. Because that will dictate, you know, what is actually shown on the cover, but also the mood of the cover. So I'd start with a mood.
Well, Marta, you're going to be putting it in a category.
Do you want an audible code? The short
story
is about a 30-minute listen.
All right, well.
No, I'm asking if he wants one.
Who are you talking?
He can say no.
Oh.
Steven.
I'm sorry. I didn't understand.
I don't
Do you
think
want an audible
right,
quote
right.
to listen to it? It's about a half an hour.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that absolutely helped. So usually what I end up doing is coming up with a couple of pieces of imagery.
Would it go into a category anyway?
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily sell it.
All right. So, wait, Marta, let's just,
yeah.
I need to end the show today, so because I have an appointment. But I want Robert, I want to ask you a question, Robert. Are you for hire for editing so people will know?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Edit,
and we know
by,
that.
Yeah, email.
Okay, so people can hire you.
I
and Stephen, we can hire Stephen.
Yeah.
And Marta, marketing?
Not really right now.
Okay, all right, so you're done with okay. So, right, so if you're thinking about
the beginning of the year, not
okay. So if you're thinking about a cover, if you're thinking about a cover, you know, contact Stephen because it's on the website here. And if you need editing, talk to Robert. So this is a good thing for people that have been listening today. If you want to get your book done right and you need to have ideas even, and I'm also going to think about this on my book. So if you're thinking about changing up your book, it might be a good idea because if you're not getting what you want out of it. So, I mean, it's just a thought. You know, doesn't mean you're going to sell so many more copies, but you might. So on that alone, it's enough because Marta's covers are good. Kathy Goldwyn has covers now, you know, so you've changed a lot of people's covers, Stephen, so that's a good thing. So
yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Just have a look at have a look at my work on my website and you know, see what you think. You know,
yeah.
Is that my newsletter on my website?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Can I charge reasonable prices? Both of us charge reasonable prices.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
all of us.
People like that because people really can't afford a lot. I mean, that's why I do the show, to try to tell people what they could do to help themselves and not get into a bind where they're paying $2,000 for a cover and it's just not going to even be what they want. So that's the thing. You have to protect yourself when you're an independent author that you don't make a lot of mistakes that are costly, because I have seen many people make a lot of mistakes and spend a lot of money, and it's very sad, and I don't like that. So that's not good. So, and I want to thank everybody for being on the show today, and I hope, Robert, you'll come back, Stephen, you'll come back, Marta.
Yeah, if you ask
we'll all
me,
come
yes.
back. Yes. What do you mean if I, yeah, of course. Oh, my God. You're
of course,
always
anytime.
Welcome. All right. Anybody that's ever wanted
thank
to be
much.
On my show, you're welcome. Anybody that wants to be on the show, just let me know. I'm more than happy to have you as a guest. So we can add you in one of our conversations.
You.
And thank you. Okay. And
thank
Stephen,
you.
Thank you. It was great meeting you, and I will absolutely contact you. And Marta, I'll talk to you soon. And thank you
I
all.
Love
everybody
you.
Have
thank
a happy,
you.
Happy, healthy Thanksgiving to everybody.
You too.
And to y'all.
You too.
Bye-bye.
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 Bye-bye.